The Academy Awards are coming up this Sunday, Hollywood's biggest night, and the man who will co-produce the Oscars is Mike DeLuca. He has produced critically acclaimed films including The Social Network, Captain Phillips, and Moneyball. He's also produced both Fifty Shades of Grey and its sequel, Fifty Shades Darker. And this Sunday, he and co-producer Jennifer Todd will take on the challenge of the Oscars. He joins us for this week's View from the Top, our series of conversations with leaders. Mike DeLuca, welcome to Here and Now.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So as a producer of Oscar contenders like Moneyball, you've attended the Oscars. Now you're in charge. What's it like to be on the other side?
It's pretty fun, I have to say. It's probably the closest I'll get to producing a Broadway musical. It's immediate. It's urgent. You know, it's different than obviously the scripted stuff I've done. It's just very in the moment. So it's an exciting change of pace for me.
What are the challenges right now?
Running time. You know, the challenges are, you know, we've pretty much book the show. We know the presenters. We know the original content that we've brought to it. We know this, you know, the nominated songs, and we like all of it. So now it's a question of, you know, can we fit it into that box that doesn't have people the following day go, wow, that was a long award show,
which they do every time, right? I mean,
I think you're going to get that no matter what, but we want to do the best we can to mitigate it.
But how do you do that when so much of the Oscars is not really in your control because it's speeches that people are giving?
My partner on the show, Jennifer Todd, and I, we approached it from the point of view of, you know, what we can affect that might, you know, create the impression of a show that was really entertaining or that moved quickly, even if you're locked into a certain running time. And yes, you're right, the speeches may push you a little bit, but we also have kind of control over that too, because we have the button that triggers the playoff music after 45 seconds. But we thought, let's look at it from the point of view of, let's not let too much time go by between giving out awards. That creates the impression of a slow show. You know, let's try and not have a slow slog or a slow area, you know, in the middle, you know, where people kind of check out. Let's have something fun every, you know, every couple of acts. So we've tried to attack that problem, not literally in terms of making the show, you know, shorter in spots, but just making sure it's entertaining all the way through.
Now, you mentioned the playoff music. I'm wondering, what is the line that gets crossed where somebody gets up there, is talking for a while, you bring on the playoff music, and then they stop the playoff music, which I feel like has happened in the past, where they say, right, no, let me finish. I'm going to finish my thought.
It's really fluid. It's such an unpredictable situation. We're really going to try not to use it if someone is like reaching the peak of a really moving speech. But it's very subjective. It's really what Jen and I and the director feel is really moving. If we feel like you're droning and you're not being particularly, you know, wise, it's very subjective, but we'll hit that music. But we told people at the nominees luncheon, you know, through this funny short film we commissioned from Kate McKinnon, you got 45 seconds. That 45 seconds starts the minute you get up out of your seat. It doesn't start when you're at the stage. So rehearse, practice, you know, fit it in that 45 seconds, including your walk up, and don't wing it, and you should be okay.
You think a lot of actors in Hollywood right now are practicing in the mirror what they're going to say?
It's a mixed bag. I bet a few people, especially people who've been there before, probably rehearse and practice, and, you know, they're professionals and don't want to waste that time. Some people, you know, are really overtaken in the moment, overwhelmed, honestly, by emotion, and do wing it by accident because they're so deer in the headlights. So you usually get a mixed bag.
The Golden Globes this year got pretty political with some of the winners, including Meryl Streep in particular, taking the opportunity to make comments about President Trump. Are you expecting this to be a very political Oscars?
You know, I think it's in the air. So, you know, even before all the recent stuff, we thought, you know, just the nature of these shows, no matter what's going on in the world, there's a topicality creeps in because it's, you know, the winners get up there and it's their moment in the spotlight and they speak from the heart. And that may include current events if they're socially minded. So there's always a degree of it. I think there's more of it, you know, in the air because of recent events. But I'm of two minds about it. I'm a free speech warrior. I think everyone, you know, liberals and conservatives should be allowed to speak their mind. I don't really agree with the pejorative, like, shut up and sing, you know, thing that's given to a lot of celebrities just because they're celebrities. But I also think the Oscars aren't an op-ed page. I think the Oscars celebrate excellence in the field of filmmaking, and it should be kind of an island of just, you know, celebration of those things within the industry. But again, you know, it's not my place to control. And I can't even control, even if I wanted to, what people say. We're just kind of grab onto the, you know, the railing and hold on for the ride and see what happens.
Now, you're producing a show that really has two audiences, the millions of people who are going to be watching on TV And then the audience in the Dolby Theater, which contains most of Hollywood's movers and shakers. How do you plan a show so that you keep both of those groups happy?
By really focusing on the universality of why we're all there. You know, I really believe that even for the people in the audience in the theater and the people watching abroad and at home here, it's the love of movies and the magical moments that we've all shared at the movies. I do think that's a universal language. So we've tried to stay focused on celebrating the work, both the work from this year and the work from years past. We think that's where the people in the theater, the people at home in this country and watching abroad all meet, in this place of really being moved by movies.
I want to just ask you a little bit about your career, because you've been in the business for decades, starting as an intern in the 80s with New Line Cinema. You had some huge successes there, executive producing Magnolia and Boogie Nights. But you also had a reputation as a big partier. You had a series of flops and you got fired. What was it that turned your career around, or your life around even?
Well, two different things. The career, it never really gets turned around, because there are... I learned this early, because I, you know, came out of the gate strong with 2 years of hits, and then I got, you know, I don't know if I can say this on the air, I got slapped pretty bad by a year of flops, and you realize, you know, I learned that lesson then, that everybody has flops, everybody, but not everybody has hits. So as long as I could continue to kind of, you know, the business is cyclical, and I would comfort myself with, whenever I was in a spell of, you know, gee, that year didn't work out so well, I do feel like the hits are right around the corner, because hope springs eternal, and you almost need that optimism to continue in the business. So the career is a circle to me. Like, it never really turned around, but it turns. It does turn, and you have your good years and your bad years. On the life lessons front, you know, it's probably a pretty cliched story, but I was a complete geek, bookish nerd growing up, didn't have a fun adolescence, had one as an adult in full view of the industry, not smart, didn't realize it at the time. Realized, you know, towards the end of it, that I wanted hearth and home and children and a partner. And once you decide that, you kind of order things to allow that to happen. And that's been kind of my journey.
Would you say you put your career second in that case?
No, I don't think that they're competitive. Like, I think, you know, as long as you're good about scheduling, you can have it all. You can have your career and make time for family, you know, your partner and your kids. It just requires scheduling.
One of your most critically acclaimed films as a producer was the 2010 film The Social Network, the David Fincher, Aaron Sorkin film about the founding of Facebook. And I have to say that as a business journalist at the time, after watching that film, I came in and said to my bosses, we've got to do so much more tech news coverage, because this is fascinating what's going on. What was it about that film that made you want to take it on? And how does that film rank in all of the films that you've worked on in your mind?
Oh, it's at the top, or, you know, with a few other ones in terms of a working experience, because I really do worship at the altar of Scott Rudin and David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin. And, you know, my partner on that film, Dana Brunetti, and I, we couldn't believe our good fortune that Scott and Aaron wanted to join that project. That produced the script that eventually attracted David Fincher. But it was based on a nonfiction book by Ben Mezrich, The Accidental Billionaires. And what I responded to, and I think what we all responded to, that Aaron kind of put in one meeting so beautifully, is the theme of the story kind of was what you lose when you win. And, you know, at least in our version and Aaron's version of the Zuckerberg journey, in the beginning, it was about, you know, the trade-off that happened for that character achieving the professional goal but causing friction in that relationship with his friend Eduardo. So that human level story is what really attracted us all.
And so what attracted you then to the 50 Shades franchise, which is about as far as you could get from The Social Network?
You know, I love titillation. Like, I like sexy stuff. I think a lot of people do. And I thought the author was really brilliant in her execution of this, but wrapped, you know, deep inside that story is a very conservative, traditional love conquers all, love redeems all archetype. It's a little bit Cinderella, you know, the princess being whisked up to the prince's castle. It's a little bit Beauty and the Beast. It's a little bit, you know, a lot of these things that have survived over the centuries because of being very powerful archetypes. So I thought, despite the S&M bells and whistles, which it's not really about, it's really a very beautiful kind of redemptive love story. That character, Christian Grey, is healed from his childhood trauma by this woman's true love. And it's the story of a couple with issues that eventually makes it work, and they end up having a kid at the end. They become a nuclear family. So I thought that was an incredible hat trick she pulled off. And a lot of people that haven't read the books or don't really pay attention to the movies miss that that's probably a big part of why it became so popular.
What's your all-time favorite movie, by the way?
Lawrence of Arabia is my all-time favorite.
Lawrence of Arabia. What's next for you after the Oscars? Or do you want to do it again? Do you think you're ready to come back next year?
Look, man, I'm on record. I've told them, like, I would like to come back. Jen and I would both like to come back because next year is the 90th anniversary. And I start to, like, drool over it. Man, if I get my hands on the 90th anniversary show, that would be really fun because I love film history. So we're on record kind of groveling for the job already. We'll see if we'll get picked. But I guess it'll depend on how we're received on Monday morning.
That's movie producer Mike DeLuca. He and Jennifer Todd are going to be co-producing this Sunday's Academy Awards. Mike DeLuca, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, man. It was a pleasure.